First, a few things about this talk. The talk is about writing using tech as a programming language. It's not about using typesetting beautiful documents in tech. It's not about introduction into tech. So if you haven't ever seen tech document before, you probably won't get much of this talk. But it's about having fun with tech, and I actually think it's some of the techniques are quite useful, as I explain in a second. Okay. Well, so the plan. The plan is to, first of all, let's justify myself. Why on earth would I do a stupid thing like that? Then actually introduce some of the programming facilities that are actually in tech provided out of the box. And next, I will talk how to do control flow in tech. Most of you, okay, if anyone here has actually written a non-trivial, if anyone here has written a non-trivial LaTeX package, for example, then you probably have to use some of these techniques without even realizing what you're doing. The fourth point is the fun part. How to actually do data structures. I'm sure that very few people here, or quite likely nobody, actually has thought how to do a linked list. I'll give you a few actually, the last data structure example will be the biggest example in this talk. I'll end with point you to some web pages of mine, how to do a quite large application in tech. Lambda Tech is actually how it all started for me. I'll get to that in a second. Okay, so there are two reasons that are basically driving computer science. Because it's fun. Because we can, why not? But what I actually hope to sort of convince you about is tech is actually a viable programming language for a very specific kind of applications. And that's applications that do a lot of typesetting. The idea is there's this huge environment for typesetting with a lot of features. And if you want to duplicate it in a preprocessor, for example, for tech, then it's a lot of work. And I've never seen anybody do it correctly, like actually accurately duplicate what tech does outside of tech. So the best way to actually get things out of tech and add things that you want, like the preprocessing of tech source files, is to actually do it in tech, given that it actually has these facilities. To be more specific, say you've got a little function called fish, and it does some stupid things. And you would actually imagine you're writing some paper for LinuxConf, and you would like to typeset it very neatly like that. And it's 3 a.m. in the morning, and your talk is at 9 o'clock in the morning, so you're kind of stressing out about it. And you look at it, I've actually typeset that manually, the right-hand side. But that was quite kind of messy. And more likely than not, if you actually the example is more than 5 or 7 lines long, it's probably going to introduce some errors while you're typesetting it. The trick bits here, if I can show you the mouse, basically, for example, the hard bits are, for example, the alignment here. Or obviously, the changing of alpha you could do in Perl. Most people would look at this problem, write a little Perl script to convert tech into tech, source code into tech. But Perl doesn't know how long, how big the alpha string will be when it's typeset. So how can it actually do the alignment? It cannot. And the way I did it is I guessed. And that's what Perl would do. But if you can actually, in Lambda Tech, I just solve a bunch of simultaneous equations and get the right answer. And it's nicely aligned. So basically, that's the motivation. The rest of the talk, I will just talk about the techniques, how to actually achieve it, not the actual example. Okay. So as I've said, the biggest motivation is actually extending tech with features that it doesn't have. For example, imagine you actually would like to do graphics in text, line graphics. line art, for example. This thing is, this presentation is done in Tech, by the way. Those lines, actually, Tech doesn't have features like that. Oh, it does have horizontal lines, but nothing else. If you want to add some circles, whatever, you cannot do it. In PostScript, in PStrix, the PStrix solves this problem by basically dumping all the programming logic into PostScript. But if you actually, for example, using PDFTech, then you actually don't have PostScript engine running at the end of it. So what you actually have to do is do all the programming logic in Tech, and that's actually some project that I've started, I haven't finished yet, but that actually ends up, you end up having to do things like matrix multiplications in Tech, which is fun. So we have to do it directly in Tech. So how would we actually do that? Well, Tech actually has a bunch of very simple programming facilities built in. You probably use them if you actually ever written like a non-trivial package for LaTeX, for example. I'm mostly talking this talk about plain text, in case you haven't realized, not LaTeX specifically. You can use all of that in LaTeX. I did, because the presentation is done in LaTeX, and all the examples actually are, output of the example is actually executed, not typed by me. So basically, you've got a bunch of registers. There's 255 of 256 of each type. There's one for the most important ones for programming in Tech is the count, so integer registers, and box registers, so they actually store a bit of typeset output. Not much to say there. Tech has this very assembly-like interface. Everything's in registers, and you basically advance registers, multiply, divide registers. That's about all you can do. Then you've got conditionals. Most of you, I hope, have seen them. I actually had to remove the slashes in front of them because verbatim environment actually will not let you put a slash in between. For a reason I understand, but don't can be bothered explaining. It's kind of complicated. Basically, so you've got a bunch of conditionals, facilities, as you could imagine. And then there's a bunch of very weird features. The only way to actually learn about this is to read the tech book from cover to cover. And because there's no, they're not listed anywhere. Things like, after the next assignment, insert this macro in the input. Do assign the meaning of this control sequence, but only after the next macro has been extended. Stuff like that. I'm not going to talk about them. That's job for whoever's explaining Tech, not hacking Tech. And there's this feature, which we'll use to do absolutely everything in this talk, which is macros. We use them kind of different way than most people use macros in Tech. In particular, what we'll use them is to do control flow in Tech. And to actually explain how we can actually do control flow with macros, you have to realize that basically all you need to do to write any program is some recursion. Some way of defining functions and recursion. That's called functional programming. So say you've got a little function called lobster, which prints 10 digits. If you actually want to do it in recursion, trivial stuff, just sort of to make it more obvious, you would write like that. You would do a if you've reached the count, quit. Otherwise, print one digit, increment the counter, and recurse. So continue with the lobstering. Now, how would that look in Tech? That's how it looks in Tech. You assign the count, start with count of zero. I'll use the register zero for it. Register zero is reserved for sort of scratch register, so it's a good choice. Register zero to 10, to nine, actually reserved for scratch registers. Then you define, slash def is the plain text way of doing new command, by the way. The reason why I'm not using new command is because it cannot do stuff like that. But with slash def you can. So basically, if the count is less than 10, then print slash number actually prints the counter. Print a space, that's the slash with space after it. Then advance the counter. Then set the macro called next to lobster. That's the recursion bit. Otherwise, set the macro to relax. Relax does nothing. That's a very useful macro in tech, which is, when you're hacking in tech, is very frequently used, which does nothing. So no. And then at the end of define, there's this next, and that's important. That's how basically all loops are structured in tech, and I'll explain why. Well, that's the output. It worked. As I'm saying, this presentation is typeset in tech, so it actually, I just typed this code in and it worked. And the question is, why do we need all the lets? Why couldn't we just put here lobster? Again, extend lobster, and then they're doing nothing. No else part. The reason is because what we're doing here is something called continuously passing style programming. And it's continuation passing style is a style invented to model or formalize things like very complex data structure, control flow structures. Basically, pretty much any control flow structure whatsoever can be formalized using continuation passing style, except asynchronous exceptions. I'm not aware of how to do that in continuation passing style. You can do things like set jump. We're abstracting from tech for a moment. We're talking about any programming language or continuation passing style language. Set jump, you can do exceptions like in Java, you can do multi-threading, and you do it all using one mechanism. You don't need multiple mechanisms, one for multi-threading, one for exceptions, one for whatever. In languages like ML, which are used quite extensively, that's used quite heavily. I mean, that's the basis of languages like ML. It's very well understood, very well researched style of programming with a lot of very interesting papers which read like Greek. And basically, what does it look like? Well, there's no go-tos, there are no loops, nothing. It's basically you only define functions and recurs. That's functional programming for you. And the trick about continuation passing style is functions never return. Instead, there is no control flow the control flow stack like you've got in normal programming languages, when basically when you call a function, then when it actually returns to the bit when you actually call. That's said on the stack. There's nothing of that. Instead, each function takes an extra argument, a continuation. And that argument is just a function, so pointer to function, which will be executed next. And when the instead of return, you've actually got called this function, this pointer to function. You can do it in C, it would be just very inefficient because you would keep building up the stack frame. In a real continuation passing style language, like ML, there is no control flow stack, so you don't have this problem. Because in C, there's this facility which is now totally unused. So it's just wasting memory. Once you actually reach the stop continuation, you exit the program. That's all it is. Is that clear? Any questions about it? Good. Okay. Why? Why would we do that? Well, as with call and normal call and return semantics, like in C, the callee, so the function being called, does not know where it's going to return. But in continuation passing style, the caller doesn't necessarily know that either. Instead, because it could just pass the continuation that it has received as an argument, or it can grab a continuation from an array. And that actually gives you a lot of flexibility. You can actually implement exception this way by passing the return value of the exception, the catch block, as a extra argument of all the functions. And when you actually want to throw it, well, that's the continuation you jump to rather than the normal continuation. Well, what does it look like in tech? Well, we've got... Oh, yeah, I did. So basically, because we don't actually have parameters to macros, I mean, we do, but they're not really usable for our purposes. The hash 1, hash 2, hash 9, whatever. So we need to actually store the continuation in a global variable. Okay? Let's call it next. That's what the let next were about. Then basically, instead of passing the continuation as an argument when calling the macro, each macro basically sets the continuation on every control flow path for the macro. So if you got an else, if else, you actually have to set it in both branches to something. If there is no continuation, stop continuation will be relaxed. Then basically at the end of the macro like that, you will have you will always have the next as the very last thing in the macro. And the stop continuation is just relaxed. The nice thing about this style of loops in Haskell, in tech, is that it allows you to, the lobster could actually consume some of the input. So lobster could actually take a hash one argument, and then it would be set always to the next character, and you could slowly churn through the characters of the input until you reach some character you want. That's the way, for example, in LaTeX. Then there's the new command star is implemented, and you've got the star after command line. That's the way it's all implemented. Or when you actually don't want to, verbatim command is implemented like that. It basically keeps churning characters. Basically, lobster then takes the argument. But the argument is actually not a functional argument to lobster. It's basically the next character of the input. That's what I meant by the arguments not being useful for our programming. Okay. How are we going for time? Okay. Yep, that was the easy part. Okay? I haven't shown you many real examples yet because I want to show them to you with data structures. Now, how on earth do you do data structures in tech? It took me actually a while to a bit of head scratching to work it out. And before I actually worked it out how to do linked list data structures, I did very evil things like storing data in the main input list and popping it out when I didn't need it. Very evil stuff. By now I can basically do, you want RM multiplication, no problem. And LambdaTeX right now, the new version, does some solving of simultaneous equations, for example, to do the alignment correctly, and that was a lot. So basically, the basic facilities that you actually do have is those registers. That's all you actually get. But we have to actually realize that we also have a bunch of infinite number, actually, of function registers. And the function registers would be basically just control sequences, like macro registers, like slash sequences. That's all they are. And we've got as many of them as we want. Not only that, they actually quite efficiently accessed because tech has very nice hash tables built into it to actually access them when you actually refer to them. The first 10 integer registers and box registers, all of that, are reserved for scratch, so intermediate result of calculation. They don't behave differently, it's just a convention that Knuth introduced. If you want the rest, another register, you just use new count, new box, whatever. Register can be global or local. In case some of you haven't realized that, generally a register basically is the value you set to a register. So, for example, when you set count equals zero, that's local to the current nesting scope. So the current piece of tech code enclosing curly braces. And if you actually want to do something global, what you do is you actually have to work global in front of the advanced command, and that will set it in all stacks. Very weird way. And for macros, obviously there's no global because tech had to be different, except thanks for all these little inconsistencies. So for macros, you don't say global, you just say gdef. Wonderful. Well, registers don't give you much. Like, in assembly language, how much can you actually do without having to access memory? Not much, right? So how do you actually be, what's memory? Well, memory is like some sort of associative array. And you can actually, in Perl, you've got hashes. In C, you've got arrays. In tech, what you've got is you've got function names or macro names that actually can be constructed dynamically. And the way you construct it is you enclose any piece of code, including any characters you want, doesn't have to be letters, in CS name and CS name. So CS name dot 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 and CS name will be a control sequence called slash dot dot dot. And if you think about it for a second, you can actually use that to do index data structures or associative maps of any. The only hint I actually have is when you actually do it, remember to put expand after everywhere. That will become clear in a second. So let's actually define a little array. Say we actually got an array, or a hash in Perl terms, which associates basically the kind of fish that sample is. Very obvious. So basically, what it says here is, well, we define two macros for accessing this array. One for actually setting an entry in the map. That's the set fish. And the other is for actually accessing an array, fish type. So set fish type basically will define a control sequence called fish type colon. And then whatever was the argument, the dollar one, string, well, what string does is takes the name of a macro and expands it as letters. So basically the slash one is actually intended to be a macro name, not a string as such. That way our entities that we actually associate with kinds of fish are macros. And then to actually find out what later, what kind of a fish the particular hash one is, you just say fish type. And that will basically just expand this particular sequence, the same one which we defined. The reason why we need expand after is because if we just say without the expand after, this would try to define a macro called CS name. And then it wouldn't find a curly brace here and would complain. So what this means is take the next token, so that will be def, expand everything after it, so expands that. It only expands as far as it has to, which is not very far in this case. So it expands CS name, so it actually gets the name of the sequence, and then actually executes def after it's expanded CS name. That's something you, if you want to program tech, you really have to get used to expand after. And I've seen examples where in the tech book, there's one example which has about a string of 10 different expand afters and no expands mixed up. And it does something weird. Well, how would you use that? Well, say lobster is yummy and the K is a python. Then if you say fish type lobster and fish type K, you get this output. Okay. And if you're a Perl programmer, you probably at this stage say, cool, now we know how to do everything because Perl programmers tend to only use hashes. Well, I'm not a Perl programmer. I mean, I am, but I'm also a Haskell programmer and C programmer. So I would like some linked list. Just in case you actually thought that was funny, let's try to do some linked list. Well, tech has absolutely no facilities for linked list whatsoever. So we have to fake them big time. I'll just give you an example rather than... Come on. Well, first of all, what we'll need to do is define some way of enumerating consecutive nodes that we're generating, because we need to generate names for each one of them. So that's kind of like storing all the nodes in an array and then actually doing the linking between them in any order. So let's grab a counter, called it node count, and let's define the first node. We start with an empty list, so the first node is empty. How do we define a new node? Well, in this example, basically, it's very simple. So basically, a linked list is just a list of strings, so a list of macros, whatever, a list of bits of text code. So basically, in C terms, it has two elements. It has data and the next field, right? Same as C. Well, what we first need to do is define two macros, obviously, for the data field and the next field for this particular node. And number expands the current, so it actually gets the current node count and generates a new set of macros for that node. One for data, one for next. And it sets the data to whatever you actually specified as the argument in the new node. It sets the next to whatever was the first node at the moment. So it actually inserts the node at the beginning of the list. Now, we also need to actually set the first node to actually the current node that we just created, as in C. And then we actually will say, well, we've actually got one node more now. How do we use that? Well, say we define a print node function, which just prints all the nodes in the linked list. Well, that's a nice example because it actually uses recursion, continuous passing style recursion, the way I explained earlier. You actually print nodes, all it does is defines the this node, so starts at the beginning of the list, and then calls a doPrint node, which is actually does all the work. I also defined a little sequence here, which is just an empty macro. The reason for that is because tech provides a facility called ifx. Ifx takes two things, and if they expand to the exactly the same thing, then it will actually be true, otherwise it's false. So if this node expands to empty, the same thing as empty macro, then we're done with the printing. Otherwise we just expand the... Oops. Not quite. Otherwise, we just expand CS name, expand the data field of this particular node, this node. And then we advance the this node. Edef is a feature of tech. It's like define, so it defines a macro, except before defining it, it expands the definition. So this thing will actually define this node to whatever this thing expands to, not to the actual string CS name node next colon blah blah blah. So it will be actually number, because the node next actually is the number of the node that's next in the list. And then we actually keep recursing. And I actually haven't run this example here because I couldn't be bothered actually setting up an interesting linked list. But it works. I know it compiles because it did compile in the presentation. So that's easier than it seemed at first, isn't it? And that is the biggest point that I want to make. It's tech hacking sounds like something that's totally and utterly unreasonable thing to do. Yes? That's meant to be the Prinode. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Prinode is just this wrapper that sends these nodes. Yes. Thanks for pointing it out. Yes. That's definitely meant to be the Prinode. The point I want to make is the main point of this presentation, really, is to suggest that writing, using tech as a programming language is actually not that eccentric as it sounds at first. When you actually got a use for it, when you actually want to do a preprocessor in tech, it's actually quite doable once you actually switch into this mode of thinking being continuous passing style. This is not longer than the same example in C. It looks different. It's not longer. One thing I actually didn't say, did I? No, I didn't say this. Oh, okay. I better say that. The reason why you actually need to go through all these continuation passing styles, so doing this let and the next at the end, the whole point of this is tech actually has a very special treatment of the if constructs. They are like any other macro. They're obviously not a macro, they're a primitive construct. But they're unlike a macro. When you actually expand a macro text, tech will always count the number of ifs and else ifs and end ifs. And if they don't match, it will complain. So if you, for example, put, rather than saying, rather than doing like this like that, if you actually replace, do nothing here, and put in here, put just do print node, and remove this next. So if you don't delay this looping until the end of the function, if you do that indirectly in the if statement, then the number of ifs will get accumulate up, and tech will basically just complain because they don't match. It always has to match. So that's why you actually always have to take out the looping out of the if statement. And because there is no recursion without an if, otherwise it would be infinite loop, right? You always have to do it. Is there any questions to this point? I've got a few examples here. I'll run the first one for you in a second if we've got time. I think we do have time, don't we? The silly example first, it's a K-fish. It's an ASCII generator. It generates ASCII fish. The second one is what got me started on it. And how I got started on it is really, I tend to write a lot of Haskell code. And Haskell is a functional programming language used a lot by research by theoretical computer science research community, languages communities. And what we tend to do with this code, more than run it, even though you can run it and you do run it quite a lot, the Haskell compiler is written in Haskell, what we do with it is print papers, put in papers and publish papers, right? And for that, it means that you actually get to typeset a lot of Haskell code in tech. Those are papers. If you do that after about two papers, you get tired of it because a large chunk of Haskell code takes a couple of days to typeset nicely. And more likely than not, you actually put mistakes in there, miss something while typesetting it. And if you typeset it incorrectly, then somebody is likely to point it out when you actually publish it. And it's kind of embarrassing. And some of the bugs can be quite subtle that you actually need to produce by typesetting, like removing variable and then actually like change order of arguments, stuff like that. So basically what I did is I looked at a bunch of, obviously that was meant to be tilde K-fish. I just have noticed that it put the tilde under the K, over the K. Actually, no, there's no tilde in there. Okay, ignore the tilde, sorry. Good. basically I looked at the number of preprocessors, mostly written in Perl, that actually took Casco, generated a bunch of tech code, and I kind of didn't like them because there's enough commands that you have to type to generate a LaTeX document in the first place. Like you type LaTeX 3 times, and you have to type like BibTeX and LaTeX again, and God knows what else, and DDIPS, and then like, you know, you've all experienced it. So adding an extra couple of commands in there to generate these pieces of tech code, and then like inserting them in the right place in the tech in the paper, that was a lot of work. And at the same time, Haskell is a literate programming language. So you know basically the default is comments, and to actually do code, you actually have to put greater than sign in front of every line. So what I thought, oh cool, let's just actually redefine the meaning of greater than sign to be a preprocessor written in text that will actually churn through the text, parse it, pretty print it, syntax select it, convert things like ALPHA into alphas, align things, everything, and then just like dump the output in the document. It works beautifully. And I've got actually a lot of users reporting like that they typeset this and this book with it and reporting bugs. So actually, it's actually a used program with a fairly substantial user base. And it's written entirely in tech. It's the current version that's on my website is about 2,000 lines of tech code. The new version is about 3,000 lines and counting. Because, you know, the second version syndrome, I had to add like C typesetting and stuff into it. it's not ready yet, but it actually does alignment much more nicely than the first version. First version alignment is kind of hacked. The second thing I actually started writing, it's also not finished, but a lot of it is done. Is a you know, for example, this presentation is written in PStrix, but I would like to use PDF tech. And PDF tech, you cannot use PStrix. For example, I've got a Mac, so I would like to get directly from tech to PDF without using DVIs and stuff. Less comments. So I actually started writing a PDF tricks. PDF tricks basically is a nice intuitive, actually it's more high level than PS tricks library for generating drawings in tech. All good. You can actually generate the PDF code that you actually need to actually do the drawings you want. But the problem is, for example, if you rotate a piece of text, you can do it. Then you have to calculate how big the resulting box is. And you cannot delay this to PostScript because PDF doesn't have any sort of calculation mechanism. So you have to do it directly in text. Which means you need a floating point library. Because matrix multiplication kind of requires floating point. Which means I had to write it too. And after that, yeah, I had to do some matrix multiplication text. What's that? Well. So these are real life examples of hacking in tech. The first one is not. But since we do have time, 5 minutes, I'll actually show you an example of KFish. Okay. Okay. So as you can see in this document, you've got. Can you see it? Yeah, see it. Let me just enlarge this so we can generate larger fish. Okay. Now the document, just so you want to probably see it, looks like that. That's the kind of fish it generates. It's the smallest fish it can generate. And basically, it's a bunch of tech code. First, I define a bunch of macros to actually do the output terminal. And there's a lot of calculation. Maths in tech tends to be quite heavy because it's like assembly style. So there's a lot of advances, and that's all of that advances do calculate this, the position of these fins and stuff in the fish. And the main loop is, where is it? There's a couple of main loops here. There's one here. Top. Yep. That's one loop, for example. And as you can see, you cannot see it yet because it's kind of long. It goes all the way to here. And flash outputs the output and does the looping. So I actually let flash where is it? Oh yeah, there it is. That's the loop, which prints top, which is the first line of the fish. Then the bottom actually prints the last line. It looks kind of similar. And again, the bot just prints one line, which does a lot of calculations, decide which character it has to print. And then there's the outbot. Outbot, which does the looping. It does an if. And if it's greater than half fish size, then it finishes. Otherwise, it keeps printing. And let's run it. You run it as. And it prints up prompt you for the size of the fish you want. So let's type 7. And it generates a fish. If you type 10. Just prints one fish. One's enough. Then it prints a bigger fish. It prints a very big fish. If you try to generate a fish that is smaller than 7, then say if, then K-fish must be at least 7. 25, I think 25 is the largest. It started scrolling. That's something I've discovered after doing it. By the way, before you think I'm totally bad, I did that on the way to uni one day because it took me about 2 hours to get there. So I just did that on the way. And I ended up getting late to uni, obviously. But the nasty thing about generating the ASCII diagrams in tech is that for some reason, designers decided to actually wrap the output on 80 columns, no matter how wide the screen is. So I suppose we need to write a. Well, what we could do is dump that to a file, and then write another tech processor to actually unwrap it. That's weird. No, that would be way too easy. It's a feature in tech. There are no bugs in tech. There are no bugs in tech. Tech is defined by source code. There are only features. That ended, I think. Yeah, it stopped doubling a couple of years ago. He defined when it stopped doubling, yes. He didn't want to be up for like a couple of million. The reason why they did it is because mostly people do that to log files, right? And they kind of want the output to be readable on a narrow terminal. So it actually always wraps it at 80 characters. Very annoying when you want to generate large fish. Okay, any questions? Any other questions? Line graphing. you mean cases? Actually, the presentation was done in my supervisor's ChuckSem package. It's a LaTeX package, and it uses PS tricks. And the PDF tricks aren't quite ready yet. Yeah. Listings package is actually not bad, but what it does, it requires you to annotate your code. And that's what I did not want to do. I mean, if Emacs can actually do syntax highlighting for me, why can't I actually do the same syntax highlighting directly in text? Why can't I just say begin C or begin Haskell, bunch of Haskell code and Haskell, and it will actually typeset that as Haskell code nicely syntax highlighted. So basically that's what I wanted. And I would still have to put like slashes in front of alphas and stuff. So basically, with Lambda Tech, with this technique, you don't need to do that. And surprisingly, before I actually say, surprisingly, one of the easiest things you can do in tech is lexical analyzers. It's just designed for that. Because it's already got some functionality built in there. So if you actually have to go to my webpage and have a look at the lexical analyzer for LaTeX, it's actually very neat. It's tedious because it's so huge. But it's very neat and very easy to understand. ETech just, it's plain tech with a couple of extra features that were missing from tech, like for example, like from plain tech. There's tech, which has absolutely no macros defined whatsoever. Plain tech, which is what actually happens when you actually type tech. ETech is actually plain tech with extra macros for doing things like table of contents. Yeah, it's a bunch of extra macros across in plain tech. And there was another question, some of that. Yep. Well, I tell you what, that's what PDF tricks are meant to do. Yeah, that's the kind of level of abstraction that I want from PDF tricks. Yes, I did. Yeah. Except it can actually deal with fonts. Because it's in tech. But that's the kind of level of abstraction I want. Exactly. Or maybe even higher.